All right, welcome back to Cosmic Disclosure. I'm your host, David Wilcock, and in this episode, we're bringing you another round with our special guest, David Adair, a man who actually was able to walk around in Area 51. David, thanks for being back.
So glad to be here.
You're describing this thing that looks like you've just rolled into the scene of a horror movie. You got some alien creature, if you will, with bones around it, and it's gigantic. You didn't have any fear as this is all happening to you.
Yeah, you're the first person that ever asked me that question. I was having fun. The only thing I was scared of is Rudolph. You know, that human down there is dangerous, you know. No, this thing was just, I was just mesmerized. You know, because every time I see something, I got about 50 questions behind that. And when the thing started interacting, you know, shadows, stuff like that, I thought, man, what's going on with this thing? So I turned around and asked Rudolph, can I climb up on top? Because the bone work was like lattice work. It's like a rib cage casting down on each end, and the meeting in the center, the ribbing would kind of interlace. So it's protecting the big surface structure underneath.
So and you can climb it like a ladder?
Well, you could. It's just, you know, think of a big skeleton of a dinosaur. You can crawl up that thing.
Mm.
So, because it had angles and horizontals and perpendiculars, so you got ways of climbing up on it. So I looked at Rudolph and said, can I climb up on this thing? He said, first thing you hear all the Air Force people, no. Yeah, go ahead. And I actually said thanks to him, and the only time I really thanked him. So I crawl up on this thing, and as I crawl on the bone, wherever I'm touching the bone structure, nothing. But the big smooth area that's recessed inside that the bone structure is protecting, when you touch it, I swim with, go to a place where you swim with dolphins and all that. It felt just like a dolphin skin.
Mm.
And you push hard, I pushed on it, it'd go in a little bit, and then it's just like rock. So it's like organic covering with steel or some kind of alloy on the inside.
So were you about 25 feet up when you got to the top, off the ground?
It's 15 feet high, 22 feet wide.
Okay.
I was about 15 feet up, about 5 foot more than a basketball goal, which is pretty tall.
Yeah.
I don't want to fall off. You definitely would feel it.
Right.
So I crawl up on,
it wouldn't kill you, but you would be hurt.
You'd definitely be hurt. So I crawl up on top, but when I pull myself up, I pushed against that smooth area. And then the thing, it started reacting. Wherever my skin would make surface contact around my hand, cascading down its side would be these really pretty blue and white waves, kind of like that wave motion machine you set in front of executives to keep them calm, little device you can buy.
Blue and white as in like light, or what did it look like?
It had its own luminosity. You could see it outside of its, of the other material. It actually glowed a little bit and would run down the side. You pull your hand off of it and would dissipate at the most outer reach and then come back to where the original contact was, and that'd be the final area that would dissipate. So, you know,
did you feel any electrical charge or anything as that happened? Any heat?
No heat, but there was something going on because I noticed the hair on my arm standing up.
Ah.
So this, but it wasn't any electrical charge, maybe static, but I didn't get a shock. But
okay.
You could definitely feel something going on. And so I lift off of it, and I turned around and look at Rudolph, and I put my hand on it, and they're watching it, right? And the way their faces look, I looked at them, I said, I took my hand off, and I'm looking at their faces, and I take my hand back on it, and they're looking at it, and I went, y'all haven't seen this before, have you? Huh? And they got mad over that. And so apparently they can't get a reaction.
It likes you.
I guess. If it was a cat, it'd be purring, I guess. But I asked Rudolph, can I climb up on top? He said, go on, Air Force. No. Yeah, go ahead. So I get up on top, and you're walking down what looks like, this is really weird, it looks like a giant spinal column with vertebrates.
Wow.
And there's a bone plate that I would say it was probably about 4 feet wide, and then the vertebrates at, and then that makes it very easy to walk. So I just step over the vertebrates, and then I notice in between the vertebrates, there's this big bundle of looks like fiber optics, but it's not really fiber optics because it's got a fluid running through it. Now the best way I can describe this fluid is when we were kids, you fall and hurt your knees, get skint. Your mom would come at you with this bottle, and you're going to hate this because it's called methylate, and it's going to burn like holy fire when it hits your skin. But the color of methylate was so unique. It's bluish, orange, green, iridescent. You hold it up to the sunlight, the bottle, it was gorgeous looking. Mm. Well, anyway, that's the kind of fluid runs through these tubes.
Weird.
And they run all the way down the whole length of the spinal column. But then lean over and look down, and it's really cool. If these fibers break out of the trunk case, every other, almost every vertebrate, and they spread out running down its sides. And when you back up from it, like down on the floor, you can see it clearly then. It looked like a human neural synaptic firing system.
But you said they looked like fiber optics, so this... That part doesn't sound biological.
No. It's just, reminds me of a lyric heard in a song, partly fact, partly fiction, a walking contradiction. That's what this thing was. It's like...
Was it breathing?
That was something I checked for. Remember I put my hands on it?
Yeah.
I was sitting there and I was being real quiet and I was looking for a pulse.
Right.
Or breathing. Didn't feel anything. But by God, it wouldn't surprise me if it did.
Yeah.
If it sneezed, I wouldn't jump. You know? So anyway, I'm walking down, and I'm heading toward, and I think of a figure eight, an hourglass, mm-hmm. a figure eight where they cross over. Mm-hmm. Right at the crossover on, God, I don't know what's front and back on this thing, but side facing out to us, there was a hole that was deep.
A hole? Like it had been shot and damaged?
Yeah, and to make things more confusing and trying to figure it out, something machine-like where you'd blow a hole in it, the metal would be really sharp, shards and hanging around the blast area. Mm. It'd be really sharp. I saw a picture once, and it looked just like this. When they fire a harpoon into a whale, it has a grenade charge, and it detonates. God, what that must feel like to that whale. But they blow a big hole in the well, and you see a big hole, and you see the blubber, right?
Right.
That's what this blast radius looked like. It looked
really?
Like blubber, not shards of metal. And actually, that's starting to disturb me, because that looks like meat. And I thought, man, what? And, yeah, you know, kept asking myself. It's like, no, it's a machine. No, it's organic. No, it's a machine. It's like you go back and forth mm-hmm. as you see things. So I lean over the side and look down the hole and ask Rudolph, can I take a look inside the hole?
Are there any lights or controls or visible?
No, it's dark in there.
Okay.
Which I don't know why I even wanted to go down in there. It's kind of nuts to think about it. Why you want to crawl in a dark hole?
No kidding. Especially this is already like a scene from a horror movie, right? Like,
well, I figured at this point it doesn't matter. I'm gone anyhow. So. So I asked Real, can I go inside this hole? Boy, the Air Force people went from no to definitely not to Rudolph said, quiet. Yeah, go ahead. And so I stepped down, and I'm expecting it to be mushy, you know, give way, but it doesn't.
Did it smell like anything?
There's another good question. There was an overall scent to the thing. I know this is going to really sound strange. Smelled like baked goods.
Really?
Now, you expect some kind of chemical, metallic odors and stuff, right? No, this thing smells like cookies.
Hmm.
I have no idea what that is.
Weird.
So I step on all the torn flesh, blubber, metal, whatever. And when you step on it, it doesn't give at all. You can feel that it's like almost like a rubber, real hardcore rubber, like a rubber on a tricycle tire.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I thought, man, what is this thing made of? So I step down, I squat down, and just slip. And just as soon as I get to the event horizon of the area, a light comes on inside. It's like a blue light.
Really?
Very light, baby blue. And you can see things down in there. And I'm looking at this going, oh, man, whatever interacts with this thing, it's got to be a bipedal anthropoid. Because there's the floor has a platform that drops off. There's a chair, like chairs we're sitting in. And you see our feet are here. Mm-hmm. So that means we have legs and knees bent. So whoever is fooling with this thing is built like me and you.
Same size body, bigger, smaller?
About the same size.
Okay.
A little bit bigger so it can accommodate you with, you know, some comfort. So I slide on down in there, and this is where it's really interesting. Apparently, this is a power plant that would be inside a spacecraft, or what it's got to be. Blast came through the hull of the craft, came into the side of the engine, blew its way into this area, and what I think this area is a diagnostic center. It's where maintenance people or crew members would sit down in this chair. There's no chair there because you can see some outlines, remnants of a chair, but the blast came through, come through the wall, through the chair, taking it out, into this wall.
About how big is this room that you're in right now?
About the area between me and you.
Oh, so it's pretty small. It's
like a cockpit.
Okay.
So, but this wall over here on the right, you're sitting down, there's like an observation window, which I thought was the coolest thing, because if it's running, that means you can see the plasma flow in this thing. That'd be so cool. How cool would that be? But the blast went through the wall, and next thing you encounter would be the electromagnetic shielding, the fields. Well, whatever blast through there, it either, the field stopped it, or they both stopped the contact. Because as soon as this made contact, simply because that kind of blast occurred, and the rest of it's intact, you would have to shut down in a picosecond, about a trillionth of a second. Otherwise, the engine would have been vaporized by the heat that's inside the plasma field, inside the electromagnetic fields. Nothing would survive. So it shuts down real fail-safe. That's how you shut it down in an emergency. So if somebody was shooting at this thing, they knew exactly where to hit.
Wow.
I mean within an inch. They knew exactly where to hit this thing to shut it down and still keep it intact.
Did you look for a control surface with the seat?
Yes, I did. Matter of fact, I sat down what was left of the chair, and right in front of me are these two big pods, about the size of a volleyball if you cut it in half. Hmm. And they got indentations, and it's where your digits go. However, it wouldn't be like that. The only way you get your hands into it, you got to put these two fingers together.
Hmm.
So that's what you got. And then you set it down, and you'll sink down till the top of your hands are even with the surface of the pods.
Are you saying that there was more width in the area where your two fingers go together?
Yeah, just enough for you to sink down into it to where the top of your fingers are now flush with the pod.
Okay.
So obviously that's what you're supposed to do.
Well, now this is interesting, David, because this sounds very, very similar to what Arnold Schwarzenegger puts his hand into at the end of Total Recall. And I'm wondering if they might have borrowed that from you, because you might have done this testimony before they made that movie.
I remember seeing
Except
that.
Except it's these two fingers in Total Recall that he does, not these. But it's very similar sounding.
Yeah, well, this is how I did it.
And okay.
Yeah, but if I remember Recall right, next thing didn't happen. I sat down, I finally get my hands settled in, and no sooner than I get them all settled, I thought, well, this is cool, it fits. These interlocking rings came up like I saw a Batman movie with the Batmobile. And its shield, you go chink, 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 and it's covered. Well, that's what it did, except it was faster than a Batmobile. It just went, you know, ding, 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 and it was all the way up to your knuckles.
Wow.
And this thing has got you. Then all those rings started tightening down, and I was thinking, it's going to cut my fingers off if it don't stop. So I started to yell for help. And it's just the interaction with the thing was, that's what it was designed for. It was maintenance people would put their hands in. I didn't build it. I don't know the language. I don't know anything. So it just, you know, I just wonder what they did with it. But obviously it was designed to maintenance. And with that window to look at the plasma field, obviously they would do alignments. Now, something else I saw in the plasma fields, I have these very specialized plates that move the electromagnetic field so I can, for efficiency. They had something that looked like a tetrahedral turned inside out. And they were spaced all along the walls, but they were all in line of sight with each other. So I think that's me, how they, I don't know what they're doing. It was just.
So you saw tetrahedrons inside?
Yeah.
What do you mean turned inside out?
It's the way that, you know how they look like a Moravian star?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Imagine you take a Moravian star and you do a reverse of it. What spike would go this way, it'd actually go in the other direction.
Okay.
And I could tell it's like some kind of reverse matrix that's not known to us. Maybe it had something to do with the polarity of the electromagnetic field. I don't know what they were doing. Didn't design it.
Right.
And I guarantee you they were smarter than me. Some of the designs, though, I saw throughout the thing, I memorized. And so when I reassembled my own version again, I cheated. I stole their ideas. They had better ideas.
So you must be scared. This thing is, it's like popping over your hands.
Well, I just about freaked out, and I started to yell for help, and it says, that's a voice I can hear. And it says, sounds like Lauren Bacall.
Really?
Some female sultry voice, and it says, like Veronica Rabbit or something like that. It just, be quiet. And it's got a hold of it, and I went, okay. You know, like, oh, God. You know, how stupid am I? I've crawled inside an alien vehicle, stick my hands down in it, grabs hold of me. God knows what's going to happen next. You know, I thought, I'm not thinking through this stuff. It's too much. Phrase kept going through my head, curiosity's going to kill the cat. You know, there was definitely information exchanged. I remember coming, it was really like an intense heat coming up my arms. And when it got to where my neck was, carotid artery, it's just like all of a sudden you have a heads-up viewer.
Oh, wow.
And images you see are just unbelievable. I couldn't make sense of anything. Saw different star systems. What I came away with is impression. That's how I think it talks to us anyhow. Because I guess we can't speak their language, so how else do you communicate? Well, we are beings of feelings. That's a whole new world, another way of communicating, like body language. Well, this is feelings and impressions.
Did you see any hieroglyphics or unusual writing like that?
No, but I saw entire civilizations, advanced worlds. This thing is a power plant that is connecting to a big craft. Then you have a crew. All three are sentient beings. Imagine your power plant's alive, your spacecraft is alive, and your crew, and y'all interlock with each other in a symbiotic relationship.
Wow.
What a way to travel through space. God almighty. Pretty much eliminate the need for damage control. Think about it. You get some trouble, get hit or something, you're the captain sitting in the bridge. You don't need somebody to tell you where the prank. You know where we've been hit. Because you feel it. You're aware of it. You know, if somebody blew a hole in your side, you would know it. And even if you didn't have visuals, you could tell where the enemy is anywhere around you.
Right.
Man, wouldn't the Navy like to get all of that? So anyway, I thought, you know, what felt like maybe hours, I'm sure I was there just a few minutes. Because people downstairs didn't even seem to be, you know, alerted I was long or even been in there too long. So I come out, and as soon as I got to the opening, the light goes back down, just like shuts off. Some kind of, you know, sensory.
I'm curious, though, were you able to see in these visions, what these people originally looked like or anything about their civilization, what the buildings were
like?
Yeah,
there was a few things that stuck in my head. Apparently, this symbiotic society, it's old, man. It's not thousands of years. It's not million years. This thing's like 8 or 9 billion years old.
Really?
It's the oldest things there is in the universe. It was, you know, just it's the first of the species of the universe, not just the galaxy, the entire universe.
Wow!
And home to them is the space between the galaxies.
Really?
Kind of like a whale living deep in the ocean. That's where these things reside, I guess. And they're a mixture of kind of like. Now that we know it, kind of like the Borg, they're a mixture of birth and construct all together, all at once.
Did you get a sense that they were a positive people, not like a warlike evil race?
No, but apparently I can't, just images, impressions, but this thing must have been in a knockdown, drag-out battle of some kind. And it got wounded. And that's the best word for it. It got wounded in a conflict. And so it's looking for a place to land, you know, repair itself or heal up. I don't know what it's done. Where are we as a planet in our galaxy? Where are we? We're right out on the very edge.
Yeah.
It flew into our galaxy. First planet it came on, M-class planet, probably been us. So it slides in. And they may have found this thing. We wouldn't have been capable of shooting something like that down, probably. Yeah.
Right.
No, they dug it up. Maybe that's why they built Area 51, where it's at. Because they hit a treasure trove, which means the spacecraft is somewhere, and it's big. So that, if you're going to follow that matrix, that means the crew's somewhere around.
Do you think that a reactor like this could power, would have enough energy density to power an entire city like Los Angeles?
Oh, not just city. It could power an entire planet.
Really?
You know, carriers come in, like one of our naval carriers went to Beirut, and they ran their reactors into Beirut and ran the whole power supply of Beirut until they got the infrastructure up. The place had been bombed to death. This thing could land on a planet. This power plant can be extracted easily. It's only got 4 disconnects and lifts right out. So you could drop it off and power an entire planet with it.
Wow.
So it's just, I don't know how much power thing's got. It's, imagine not just a yellow star like ours, the medium star, and you pour a million Earths inside the thing so big. I think this thing's got the power of a giant blue. It's just...
Wow.
Unlimited. And could imagine what weaponry if something like that, but the thing never seemed to have a need for weaponry, maybe defense. But anyway, I crawled out of this thing, and I had a different attitude. That was an excellent question you asked me, was I scared? I never was scared of this device or anything in Area 51. I was more scared of Arthur Rudolph than anything. So I got out. But I am so angry when I come crawling out of that thing. I guess because I've seen so much. And what hit me is that nobody knows about this. Nobody has a right to keep this kind of knowledge away from everybody. I stopped and I talked to these guys again, the Air Force people and Rudolph. And finally, they asked me something. And, oh, they wanted to say, did I learn anything in there that I could tell them how this functions? And that was the last straw. I just yelled down to them, look, this thing is not ours. It's not theirs, the Soviets. As a matter of fact, it's not from the neighborhood, is it, guys? I said, and how old is it? How long have you had it? And did you shoot it down? I don't think so. Did you dig it up? Boy, now they're bristling. And they are furious. And I don't care anymore at this point. And because I told them, nobody, I mean nobody, no president, no head of state, has a right to withhold this kind of knowledge from the entire human race.
You said this out loud as you're standing up there
on
the platform?
Yeah, it's a good place to...
In the middle of Area 51.
Yeah, it's a good place. I hadn't thought of it until you said that. I guess I was stump preaching. Man, look at the stump you're standing on. But I don't know. I just had this... I'm normally very easygoing and everything, but boy, at that moment, I am just furious. And I'm saying things I thought, David, did you just say that to them? Yeah, and I'm pissed off. Well, they're angry. And they tell me, get off the damn thing. And so I'm coming down, and when I put my hand back on the smooth area, on the inners of this thing, as soon as my skin hit it, cascading 20 or 30 feet down the side of this thing, way longer than the blue and white, now it's red-orange flames going down halfway down this thing's body, where my contact is. I pulled it back, slapped it on again, and it's there. And as I'm marveling at what's happening, it starts retracting back down, then it turns back to blue and white. Hmm. Because I'm coming down. This thing is not heat-sensitive recognition alloy. This thing is feelings recognition. This thing feels me. It knows when I'm easygoing and when I'm really pissed off. It's how in the hell does it do that? It's interacting. Well, anyway, we come down off of the engine. All they tell me is get on the cart. Get in the back. You know, just real curt. So I get in the back, and I'm facing outward, and they're driving forward. And we're going back up the causeway, back up to the elevator, so we can go back up to the roof, desert floor. And that's when I hear these guys whispering, because the wind's blowing past them, past my ear. So I can hear them. They don't think I can hear them, and I can hear everything. And they're saying, you know, we got to get him to help us figure out how this engine works, or get him to replicate another engine like mine so they can have one to take apart and one to have working. That way they have a completed cycle and they can start mass producing. And they said they need it for the first strike fleet. And I'm going, God, how many do they plan to build? Well, how many nuclear warheads do we have in 1971? 4,000? So they want my speed. That's how do you win MAD? MAD, mutual assured destruction. It's what we live under, have lived under since the Trinity test. The only answer to winning MAD is speed. Whoever strikes first and strikes the fastest wins.
Right.
And I just gave them the vehicle they need.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, I'm trying to build you a power plant. You want to go nuke half the planet. Because they're not thinking, if you nuke the Soviets, who do you have to kill that same day? China. Now you're looking at 50% of the population of the planet. So what you're talking is a worldwide military coup, and we will be reigning kings. That's horrifying. That's worse than the Germans. And now I'm getting even more pissed, because I'm trying to give you unlimited energy, clean, change the carbon footprints. I'm not a tree hugger. I'm a science person. You know, I build things. But this is good for you, your kids, your grandkids. You bring carbon footprint to a halt. Another thing this engine can do, I can go send one over to Yucca Mountain, burn all of its waste into my reactor, give you energy, and get rid of the waste forever. I mean, man, this thing could really change this place. And here they want to make a weapon system out of it so we can... So that's all they think. When you first discover nuclear power, what do you do with it? Build a nuclear power plant? No, you blow a hole in the ground. You know, so it's just really pissing me off. So now I'm riding up to the surface on the elevator, and I'm thinking, I got to blow my rocket up. This just sucks. It took me 26 months to build this thing. It came out of me. It's like you have a child. And now... Because of their moronic ways, you're going to have to kill your child. That sucks. So I get up to the hangar floor.
Now, Curtis LeMay was one of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Right.
I believe during John F. Kennedy's administration.
That's right.
Yeah, so you're talking about the highest levels of the American command structure that want to use this for first strike.
That's correct. I can see where you're going with this. I don't want to tell you, man. I'm just an average guy, and I just realize everything's getting perverted. They just want to do destruction. Just how much have we learned from all the wars? Not a damn thing, except how to kill more efficiently. So here's the problem with how do you blow up a rocket on a top-secret Air Force base and you got nothing but your clothes? What are you going to do? So I'm sitting there trying to think. I thought, God, come up with something. I can't let him walk away with this. So I saw the answer. We pull up the elevator, levels out up at the top. We're back in the hangar. So I walk over to the hangar doors, and I look down at the wheel. There's a hub. So I just kind of lean down like I'm sitting against the door and reach down, and I get a handful of graphite grease. Ask anybody what happens when graphite meets deuterium. It's a violent reaction. So I start screaming and hollering, I'm never going to see my rocket again. You're going to take it away from me. Just be a whiny little thing, because Rudolph can't handle that. I said, at least let me see it once for it. And he told the two guys, take him on the cart and go out there and need to check the pith, you know, the engine out there anyhow. So we went out there, just me and these two guards. So we drive up. I said, you know what? You guys might stay in the cart here. This thing may be leaking. Them guards aren't going to move. So I get out. I go in. I open up the induction chamber, slide in the graphite. It's going to be pulled into the cyclotrons, and the cycle will start up 90 seconds. Hope that's enough time.
Oh, wow.
So I set it for 90 seconds, close the door, and you hear it winding. I turn around, and the guards go, oh, my God, it's leaking. Did you hear that whine? Yeah, it's going to detonate. We get in that cart, and, man, they are leaning forward, you know, to see how fast they can get. We were just touching high spots on the ground. You know,
oh, my gosh.
And he asked me a really good question, like you asked. What's a safe distance? And I'm sitting there going, if it goes, oh, God, if it goes nuclear, I went, Chicago? And the guards look at each other and they lean forward. You know, just, we go hell flying through there, and more likely to be killed in this damn cart than the blast. But we get up to the hangars, and boy, piss them, she detonates. And it blows a hole the size of a football field, about 100 feet deep. Did not go nuclear.
Oh, wow.
Just convention. But biggest piece they found out there, about the size of my thumb.
But how loud was it? Did you have some hearing damage?
As a matter of fact, man, that is a fabulous question you asked. Yes, I have permanent hearing damage in the ultrasonic range in both ears forever.
Wow.
Kind of handy, though. I could be laying in a room, and there's a cricket. I can't hear it. Anybody else is going, God, I can't stand that cricket. What cricket? You know? And we hear in mid-range and low range. I'm fine. But the ultrasonics, gone.
Wow.
No one ever asked me that. So it's real. This is real stuff. Real permanent damage. Real reactions. So even the audiologist, when they take my reading, they went, man, what hit you? I said, why? He said, the way your inner ears and stirrups, it must have been an ultra high pitch. It must have been one whale of an explosion. I went, yeah, it was. So, anyhow, get back up there, and now I'm going to show you how smart Rudolph is. He's just looking at this, you know, mini nuclear cloud out there, and he looked at the guards, and he said, what happened? He says it was leaking. Now, he knows these things don't leak. So he's looking at me, and he grabs my hand and rolls the hand over, and he looks at the hangar door. That's fast. And he just looked at me and said, very clever. And then he just hits me so hard, my lower teeth push through my lip, and I'm hit the ground.
Oh, wow.
And I'm spitting blood everywhere. I've got a really nice-looking scar inside. And I hear all these guns cocking. I thought, man, just at this point, just go ahead and shoot me. I don't care. And I roll over and look up, and guess where all the gun barrels are pointing? At Rudolph.
Really?
these are Air Force personnel. He's a Nazi. He just smacked the heck out of a Midwest Ohio boy in front of these Air Force people. And I look up, and I went, you know, just bleeding everywhere. And I look up, and I went, well, Rudolph, I guess you're not in charge after all. And apparently these guys look like they ain't through with World War II yet. And he had Men in Black there. They grabbed me. Mm-hmm. And off we go. And we go through the hangar, go through an office area, and then down a hallway. And I'm put in this room where there's no windows, just a door, light bulb hanging from the ceiling on wire, and that's it. Uh-oh. And they slammed the door shut. And I'm sitting there going, man, I'm in bad shape. And that's where Rudolph, on the way there, he just wanted to get his point in. He said, just a minute, I want you to see something. So we go in this lab-looking thing. There's a cadaver laying there. Pull the back. It's a 17-year-old male, he tells me. He goes, we're going to change the dental records to match yours. We're going to burn this thing to a crisp and send it back to your parents, saying that you were burned in an accident at White Sands, and you're going to stay here the rest of your life. Now, this is a sociopath you're talking to.
Wow.
And that's when they locked me in that room. I started crying. I'm only 17. I knew I was done. Who is going to come and rescue me? You know, and Colonel Bell was, meanwhile, locked in his quarters at White Sands. But I found out he broke loose, overpowered the guards, and called LeMay. LeMay's en route to Area 51 right now. And if you didn't know this, Area 51 is under the command of SAC, Strategic Air Command.
Right.
So who pointed all the commanding officers? LeMay did. Hmm. So he ain't asking. He's just flying straight in. And I hear a lot of ruckus out in the hallway. And the door flies open. And all I see is a silhouette, big square shoulders, and somebody doing this with a big stogie. And if you ever seen any pictures of LeMay, you would go, that's Curtis LeMay. He's got hold of a tie. The tie is around a full-bird colonel of the Air Force that he's been slinging back and forth. That's where the banging I heard. And he was banging this colonel who's commander of the base. And he's so furious. He appointed this commander. So all the commander knows, civilian or not, that's a four-star chief of the Joint Chiefs got you by your tie. And he looked down at me, and I'm just a mess. And he looked back at that colonel, and that colonel quickly said, we had nothing to do with that. Rudolph and his other guys did. He said, where's he at? He just left. Find him and get him cleaned up and put him on my plane. And we flew from Groom Lake to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And they put me in the general's car and drove me back to my house in Mount Vernon, Ohio. And that's how I spent my summer vacation of my junior year in high school. And when they asked me to write that up with, I'm a rising senior, went back to school.
They who asked you to write it up?
The English literature. What did you do for your summer vacation?
Oh.
Well, I'm going to tell you. Yeah, well, I invented the fastest rocket on Earth, and I met this madman Nazi war criminal that's been riding me all the way, and I'm working with a four-star general, and I'm at a secret Air Force base, and I blew up the missile and saw an alien power plant. So I just said, I've worked at Pizza Hut. What are you going to say?
All right, well, that's all the time we have for in this episode of Cosmic Disclosure. I'm your host, David Wilcock, here with our special guest, David Adair, and I thank you for watching.